Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is coach and facilitator Austin Walker, who focuses on leadership and men's personal development inside and out. In addition to one-on-one partnerships, Austin leads several men's groups, including the Man Cave, a space dedicated to BIPOC men to connect and share their perspectives. In this conversation, we explore Austin's journey from boyhood to man, the connection between leadership and intimacy, and the essence of finding and doing meaningful work. You can find more side-by-side episodes at sidebysidepodcast.podbean.com. And if you'd like to connect with me about my services, please visit www.robertkwonghome.com.
Well, it's been a while because I think you and I have been wanting to connect in this way or just be able to catch up, Austin, for a while. So I'm glad we were able to do it at like the start of 2024. It's been, I've been wanting to like deep dive and connect with you for a long time. So thank you for saying yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a no-brainer. I'm a big fan of your podcast, your interview style, the conversations that you've had, and you. So I'm glad we chose to have a separate breakout for where we could get connected and then also have more spaciousness for wherever our conversation takes us today.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad we caught up a little bit first and then be like, hey, it'd be nice to like record something podcasters and content creators, you know?
Totally.
Maybe for listeners who don't know, we are both coaches and we met through our training experience. And you know, since then a lot has happened in both our lives, I think. So a little bit maybe about like 2024. How's the year going so far? What's been on your mind this year?
What's been on my mind? I love the question. I heard it, what's alive for me right now? Or at least that's a question that I've been asking a lot lately, and I love where it points to. Yeah, my life is very full right now, Robert. We talked about this a little bit when we connected a few weeks ago. Where I'm at in my journey is, I'd say over the past 6 months, shining a more reflective light into where am I not giving my presence and my leadership in this experience of man that I've claimed to be. Mm-hmm. And something that's really been evident to me is that's been needed in my family, or both needed and I want to show up differently into that space.
Yeah.
For context, I'm the oldest of three boys. I'm 35. My brother's 34. And then my baby brother's 30. My parents are 69 and 65. Mm. And I've really been focusing on, or I've been really present to time.
Yeah.
Particularly as I'm currently temporarily back in Virginia, not too far away from where I grew up. And I'm staying with my 91, soon to be 92 year old grandmother. And it's had a really unique impact on me on a number of fronts. She's one of the most important women in my life. And living with somebody who is living in their 90s, and I mean, that's rarefied air.
Yeah.
And I take it this, as I'm looking within the scope of my family, in 20 years from now, I'm going to be 55 and my dad is going to be 89 and my mom's going to be 85. If I go another, 30 years, I'm 65 and I don't even know if both of my parents are still alive if you look at just demographics. Yeah. And so it's this really interesting idea. I think that's one that's really present for me is, how do I want to spend my time?
Yeah.
And how does it that I want the time with my family to be? And I'm realizing that a lot of the things that I was introduced or was normalized for me around family are not actually the things that I want. And that as a man who loves intimacy now, but even just realizing that is an awareness of even the last 4 years, that I want a much deeper experience of love. And that's not going to happen unless I choose to do something differently about it and model and create new pathways within my family. So it's a long-winded way to say family has been one of the biggest priorities in my life. This sounds so coachy, but I'm going to say it, like reinventing the relationship that I have and how my family does relationship. Mm-hmm. I have been leading conversations with my father around what it means to lead, as he's been the patriarch in my family. And mm-hmm. I feel like I'm in this experience, which is still trippy to think about, that I'm stepping in to be the patriarch of my family, or rather, even crazier, that I am right now. Mm-hmm. And in terms of being willing and choosing to go places where I see as perceived edges for my father, and that is having conversations and being in relationship that require emotional depth and intimacy. So I know I'm putting in a lot there. So actually, let me just take a moment to pause as I round that out, which flag me, Robert, because I have a tendency to do that. I've noticed that there's just a lack of leadership in my family, for lack of a better word, that's had a huge impact on how we do things. And how things have been is also not indicative of how things can be. And that's where It goes back to, how is it that I choose to be around them?
Yeah. Well, thank you for like starting from the vulnerable place. I sort of like asked as like, maybe it'll be like a, what is it? Conversation starter, but really you just dive in. And I love like the way that you just went for it. I'm curious to you, because you and I are the same age. And I think a lot of what you're sharing about your relationship to family, your parents, and how much time is left is so resonant for maybe for this time in our life. Because I'm noticing a lot of my peers are also going through that, of like looking at career and family and being like, wow, time is limited. And it makes me want to ask you, like, what to you is the difference between a boy and a man?
Yeah, so relevant for me. In my definition, a boy chooses based off of his feelings, his thrills, the stimuli that's around him, without the processing of why I'm doing what I'm doing. Is the things that I'm choosing, how I'm showing up, in alignment with my highest commitments? I think if we boil it down to it, and this is relevant because I took on a men's rite of passage journey last year in 2023 in May. And for 34 and a half years of my life, I look back and realize that a lot of how I chose and related to myself was as a boy. I did things because it felt good, or it was exciting, or it was fun, or because I wanted it. And claiming the responsibility of being a man, in my view, is being willing to discern how you show up, and what you do is really filtered through what you say that you want and who you're committed to being. Mm-hmm. So there, it can't not be connected to what your highest commitments are, or the standards that you've set for yourself, and being in integrity with that, and being responsible for how you show up as filtered through what you really want.
Yeah, to me, like, you know, certainly thinking about manhood and what it means to be a man, and a good man or a strong man for me has been so much about, how do you show up for the people that you say you're responsible for, that you're committed to, you know? Mm. And so much of that is baked into what we say we care about and how we show up for it, like you say, you know, not just in like the moment to moment thrills and everything. And, you know, again, it makes me think about how much you probably have been reflecting, just also being in your hometown. So you grew up in Virginia, you're kind of around your childhood environment. It makes me curious, what was life like growing up for you? Who did you look up to? Who were your like role models? Do you remember?
What was life growing up? That question hits me a few ways now. One, when I was in my childhood, I, and maybe this is common, but I feel like there's this experience of kind of don't know what you don't know, and what you do know is your reality. I felt like I would have described my childhood as fairly normal. I grew up with affluent parents, and even from the lens of being African American and Black, being that I had the privilege to grow up in affluent areas, and money and resources weren't something that I needed to be especially mindful of because they were in my family, I oftentimes consider myself very fortunate. As I look back now, as I've got more clear on how the world works and more discerning of what I learned or what was normalized to me may not actually be the things that I want. I go back and look at it and realize that I lived in a household that I dealt with a caretaker, my mother, who dealt with substance abuse for 4 or 5 years in a very informative period of my life from like 12 to 17. And then, of course, you can do the math for my brothers as well. That had a huge impact on my family experience and even furthermore, how I related to myself, how that informed me essentially being a people pleaser for a good majority of my life, as that was my way to be able to kind of control how I would receive love. I could talk for hours about the myriad of trust issues that I had around women and why, again, with the great majority of the relationships of my life, basically until I turned 30, were extremely hollow and self-oriented. Mm-hmm. So I share some of those details, and most of those are awarenesses from what I've gained for myself, but I realized that, I had a lot of things that I can be really thankful of. I think to bottom line it, the experience of family that I have is very different from the experience of family that I want to cultivate for my future family, mm-hmm. my wife and kids. And I think the big thing that was missing was this sense of connection and intimacy, where there's a very much of an unspoken, and of course, a house with also 4 men too. So there's this whole other period of how men show affection. There is this idea of, oh, we all love each other, but we don't say it. And we have very specific and I felt closed off ways in which that is expressed. Mm-hmm. And that's actually not how I want to receive nor give love.
Yeah.
It was fine. And there is a lot of around how I grew up that influenced how I showed up in the world, which a lot of it was unconscious to me for, I would say, the majority of my life. And now I'm really in a phase where I am more conscious so I can be more responsible around attuning to who I be around it. So part one and a lot from there. And I'll say from people who were role models or people I looked up to, I looked up to my father. My father, my dad continues to be the most, how will I say it? I think I'll say like most impressive man or the man that I always looked up to for his stability that he offered during turbulent times. And it's also shifting a little, I don't know if shifting, but I have a little bit more of a nuance to it now when I'm looking at maybe the role or the things that perhaps my father wasn't attuned to that actually had the family situation be in the place that it was. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting question because I look up to the things that my father does really well. I just so deeply admire his willingness to do it. And his edges are really highlighted for me right now. And I'm looking at that through a new lens for my family, for myself. And also, like, actually, how can I relate and be with my dad in a way? I feel like I actually have the gifts that would be supportive for, like, his edge. And so it's this kind of unique relationship that I'm in right now of how can I actually kind of be the thing that's needed? And because I can be. Or at least I feel that I can.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that must be a new way. I mean, talk about reinventing your relationship or your dynamic with family. Doing that with your parents is major. And you said you talk about leadership with your dad. So I'm really curious, like, what were some themes that came up for you as far as like being a leader in today's age and being a man and a leader?
Yeah, these are such big themes because you have masculinity, you have leadership. Specifically with my father, I mean, even just a few weeks ago, I shared with him that our leadership matters because I also don't, one of the highlights is that I haven't been showing up as leader myself in my family up until recently. So it's really easy to point the finger and be like, oh, dad, these are things that you should have been doing differently, or I see that you could have done better without taking ownership. Right. Wait, what about me? Because I have as much influence or pull as I choose to have. So I think that's an important point of it. So a lot of the orientation was around we need to, like, our leadership matters. Mm-hmm. And specifically, you're right. There's been some elements recently, even around my mother's substance abuse from the past and even more so present, that we had a discussion about. It's our responsibility to know what's going on within our household and with the people who are within our household.
Yeah.
Like I view it as part of masculine leadership and providing structure within a family. It's our risk. It would almost be like there was a fire burning into the kitchen and we're in the basement and smoke is, it's not okay not to know. It's our responsibility to know kind of what's going on within the four walls of the home.
Yeah.
And so that's been really the big conversation. And if there are things that are happening that we're not aware of, then what has that be? And for my father, and then of course for me in my own way, it's generally an indication of lack of connection and lack of intimacy.
Yeah.
Which is one of the central, I don't know what the right word, almost like Achilles heels of our family is, of actually not willing and wanting to be intimate, to actually talk, share through the feelings, let other know what you're going through, help being requested. So that's been the big thing, is really, I think I could bottom line it, is showing up and modeling how you can love differently. I think is underrated in the terms of, it can give people access to what they don't know, or what they don't know that they don't know.
Right.
As cliche as it may be, like doing the same thing and expecting the same results, especially if the results aren't the thing that you want, is not going to create something new. So
yeah,
it's this, our family requires more of us. Who we are as men and as leaders requires more of us. And it's our responsibility to do that.
And it sounds like such a service to all the relationships, obviously, to, you know, everybody in your family as well. And it can make such a profound impact, like you say. And we don't realize that when we're younger, to see all the things that really deeply affected, you know, the rest of our lives, you don't notice it in the moment. But I also just hear a theme of like leadership as like attentiveness. You know what I mean? It's not just like being there physically, but it's just like actually being like caring about what you're seeing and checking in with what's going on around you. And yeah, it's like, I wouldn't have thought of that as leadership, but it really is, because those are the people who can break cycles first, because they're the first people to notice that something needs to change. So I think that requires a deep sense of leadership, and it's uncomfortable and vulnerable and all the stuff that comes with being a leader too. Yeah. Which is not always doesn't look so glamorous all the time, I guess is what I'll say.
Absolutely not. Well, there's a few points. One, my coach, and this I will actually say, is the man who, I've never met a man who more deeply embodies integrity, responsibility, and ownership than my coach, Mark Hunter. And so I've been working with him for the past few years. So I feel like his disciple in some way, in some of his leadership tenets. And he shares that he fundamentally believes that the world would be a completely different place if everyone related to themselves as leader. And I've come to really align with that. And to the point that you just made, leaders are willing to own. And they're willing to say, hey, I'll actually be responsible for this. I will choose that. So if you're talking about this awareness, the state of the family, how you regulate yourself, do you choose to be attentive to what's going on, or to be curious around what a situation needs, particularly with loved ones? Or do you choose to ignore, to do the thing that's easier, or whatever other thing may be? So I think that's a really important choice point.
Yeah.
I will also preface, a lot of this conversation has been around family, and I also want to preface, choosing to be leader anywhere can be wildly important, and I think will make a huge impact. And choosing to be leader in family is absolutely a higher gradient of it, because of the fact that family can be a very triggering space. Even considering within a traditional family of parents or caretakers in some capacity, at one point, these people truly were your caretakers. You depended on these people for survival. And so there's a different relationship that you have with a caretaker than I would say you have as somebody and relating to them as an equal or even as leader.
Yeah.
And so I often, my experience within my family is the man that I know myself to be today in how I show up with my family. And I also feel like to a degree of how my family views me, there's a little bit of a lag. And a lot of that's because, you know, I'm still adjusting to bring all of my leadership and my presence, which is, it feels kind of like swimming upstream where somebody relates to you and has a specific understanding of how things should be with you. And then you say, yeah, actually, no, it's different, and be willing to abandon that is something.
I've definitely heard this idea of, like, you know, sometimes people, it's hard for people to accept your change and your transformation, because it's like you've killed off the person that they used to love. You've become a different person. And, you know, yeah, they didn't necessarily decide that they wanted the relationship to change. And I've definitely felt that, both like being at the effects of it, you know, in a relationship, someone's changed and they're not, you know, who they used to be anymore, and vice versa. You know, I've done that in relationships. So I think you're right. It's high gradient, particularly because I think, you know, when we're going for like career wins, for example, those can be pretty tangible, and it's something that you can sort of do in your own path somewhat because it's your career. But with family stuff, you're not getting a medal, you're not getting a promotion out of these wins. These are truly just like for you, and it has to be enough, gratifying enough for you, because that's all you're getting out of it, is like you get the relationship that you help cultivate, and that is the reward in and of itself. But for other types of wins, especially for career, there's a lot of external validation and external factors that can help you, like, motivate you. But I think with the personal wins, it's the hardest, because it's got to be enough for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I think you hit the nail on the head where it's got to be for you. I mean, even with this leadership role, this vision that I have for how I want my family to be, although there would be a lot of benefits to the family for doing this, we're more connected, we spend more time with each other, the quality of our actions are all healthier, we're there for each other, which are all beautiful. But at the end of the day, I'm doing this because I want it, period. So I think that can often get lost in it around these altruistic things that we take on and the benefits, this will help. And I think it's, at least for me, it's really important for anything that I do, the work that I do, the men's groups that I lead, the relationship that I'm in, how I show up with my family, it's because I want it.
Right. I mean, that's the difference between like a boy and a man in some ways. You know, it's like you want it, and then also you're gonna own it. That's how you get it, right?
Perfect tie back to that. I couldn't agree more.
And I know, you know, with your passion in personal development and coaching, the same way I am, you had some career experiences prior to that that was really informative. I think you had you've shared, like, on your website, anyone who knows your journey, you were moving up the corporate ladder, you know, as you became more and more interested in coaching and training and stuff like that. What was that time period like? And like, what did that experience give you? What was enlightening about it that helped you figure out where you needed to go next?
Prior to me stepping into my life as coach?
Yeah, you were doing some corporate work, marketing, I believe, right?
I had about, say, probably 8 or 9 year career before I did my own thing. 4 of those years were in government contracting. Just anybody who grows up in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, that's basically what you do, is you work into the government. And then after that, I had about a 5 to 6 year career in technology sales, working with companies like Gartner and Accenture, selling and consulting on technology solutions. So the thing that I'll share about all of that is, well, the genesis for doing any of it was this idea that I had, again, unconscious at the time, but looking back at it was like, wait, I didn't consider anything else. When I graduated, the only thought that I had was, how do I make as much money as possible? Well, I didn't consider, what is it that I really want? What's going to be fulfilling? What's going to be meaningful to me? And I don't say that as a bad thing. It wasn't. It served me really well in some areas of my life. And it also was a driving factor in creating a life that didn't have much internal meaning for me. So I had, really successful 10 years. Government contracting was interesting. It was my first experience in corporate. I thought it was really informative to understand how back office business works. Particularly, I was more of an HR generalist. I did payroll, finance and accounting, security, business operations, which is really supportive now, skills as a solopreneur. And then in sales, it was my first experience of, I'm actually doing something where I get to feel like I get to use me and like my personality. I didn't have this language at the time, but like my essence felt like mm-hmm. it got to come through a little bit because of the dynamic element of the work. And what I come to learn to realize around that specific expression is I loved what sales did for me, but I didn't actually love the work. So I loved the paychecks. I loved the autonomy that I had. I loved the adventure. And so all those things, when I had them, became less meaningful to me. So although the work was, generative and I was really successful at it, it became more clear the longer that I was in it that this wasn't the experience that I wanted with it. So, I look back at my corporate life fondly. I had a great experience. I met a lot of really great people who are still connected into my life today. But the big takeaway, I think it's I don't know if I'd say a cautionary tale, but be really intentional about where you're putting your energy and your time. Because I didn't start to have these conversations around what is it that I really want? Who am I? Am I in integrity with who I say I am? Until I was, 31 years old. And I didn't become a man until I was 34 and a half years old. And which is great. I honor that this was the time that my specific journey led me to that. And it's also a really interesting question where it's like, dang, what would I have been like had I had this awareness or been honed in at this man that I am today at 24? Right. Yeah, it kind of goes back to the compound interest thing. Well, damn, if I had known about compound interest, I would have been investing way longer ago. But then again, it goes to the next best time right now.
You never know. You may not be here now without all the pit stops in the middle, exactly. as they say. You just don't know. And so sometimes all we can do is be here now, as they say. But
trust it.
I was in many ways similar. I was in a cubicle, for 3.5 years leading up to the coaching training and getting and hiring a coach and working with one. And it was very much out of the same reasons. I was like, there's got to be something more. It's not that I'm not grateful for what I have already. I appreciate it. But there was just something missing and I couldn't exactly identify it or put words to it, which is pretty important in this journey, to be able to name what it is that you're wanting in the future. And it's hard to describe coaching training unless you have some exposure or you're kind of have worked with coaches of a certain type. But what was your biggest takeaway? What was the most transformative aspect of the training experience that you and I have gone through? And also you may have gone through in addition, after mm-hmm. that.
Well, I'll focus on the initial coach training because I certainly had additional elements from that. From that year that we spent together, which started right before the pandemic. So I credit this as a awareness generated prior to the pandemic because that had its own other thing in itself. I often tell the story that I felt like I lived a lot of my life prior to this with my hands over my eyes. So I was really unconscious. I was successful by a lot of classifications that culture or society would say. It was a high-paying job. I was in a good city. I had the look for things. And the challenge was that it wasn't success that was defined by me. It was success defined by what expectations should be on me based off of my identity, my caretaker, my gender, et cetera, et cetera. So the biggest awareness that I had is I felt like it was the first time that I opened my eyes. And with that, it redefined my relationship to my truth, doing things because I wanted in my voice and my unique expression. It redefined my relationship to what it meant to be a man. It completely redefined my relationship with intimacy and vulnerability. I mean, it's comical now of us being able to talk about anything on a podcast. Whereas if you had met me this conversation 5 years ago, Robert just wouldn't have existed. Wouldn't have talked about any of this, And it's ironic because intimacy and connection and owning and sharing my truth is one of the things that nourishes me the most.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was really unsafe. I didn't realize, and this was kind of a result of after the coach training program, how much mm-hmm. guilt and shame that I had lived with mm-hmm. that was masked, where I felt like it wasn't okay to have failed how I failed or had some of the experiences that I had or fallen short in some of the areas that I had. And so there was just this general acceptance of me and owning my story and who I am. And of course, that's a continual journey, which I'm on still to this day. But I'd say that's the big thing, opening my eyes and redefining those areas that I just mentioned: truth, masculinity, intimacy, and vulnerability, which have had seismic, tectonic shifts within the arc and framework of my life.
Yeah. If I were to go back to the first session, the first time we actually met in person, I remember that for the both of us. No, we're such different people that I remember some of the early memories. I remember you dancing at some point.
Oh, yeah. Damn it.
I know. No, it was good. It was good.
Yeah.
I think people talk about sales in a particular way, but I think there's a presence and extroversion and charisma that comes with people who are naturals at it that I think are really, really powerful. So, but you're right. We wouldn't probably not be having this type of conversation 5 years ago. No way, without all of the ups and downs that have happened since then, as far as coaching and also outside of coaching. And, as the more that you talk about leadership development, teamwork, being a solopreneur, being a creative, I know you also have a background in athletics, right? What did you play? Basketball, football?
I was a football player.
Does anything from your time as an athlete come up as far as things you learned as an athlete or things you got to practice that is still important to you? Or is there anything that applies to coaching that also applies to being a good athlete?
It's a great question. I look at it with my experience with football are more life skills that were grounded into me. So I always credit football was my access way to understanding the value of hard work and work ethic.
Yeah.
It was the first experience where I had, you don't have to be the strongest, you don't have to be the fastest, but if you're willing to work the hardest and be the grittiest, you can have success. Because I wasn't the fastest and strongest comparatively to some of the athletes that I played with. But then again, I played in 49 at a career, 50 games at University of Maryland. And I even got the opportunity to play college football, where if you had saw me as a freshman or a sophomore, honestly, even through the majority of my high school career, I probably wouldn't have been on many people's radar. So I think that applies to everything else in life is the willingness to control, your effort, your attitude, how you show up. That's really important. So yeah, I think that's the biggest one. I mean, I could share some other things, but that's the one that I feel touches every part of my experience today. And particularly as, a solopreneur or somebody who self-generates, it's a really important characteristic that supports what I'm building.
And, thinking about the things that you're building, I know you lead a group for BIPOC men specifically to connect, to gather, to reflect, and to dialogue, maybe mm-hmm. in similar ways. What has that been experienced like for you? You shared a little bit of it with me, when we connected earlier, but I'm just curious if there's anything more you want to share about that experience and what people get out of it,
Yeah, I appreciate you asking about it. It's been the most rewarding output of my work thus far. And I feel like my journey to find out how do I uniquely share my gifts and my truth through my work, whether it's coaching, facilitating, holding space for community, I think has been an ongoing question since I started in 2020. And I'm at this space right now where I really I found a strong affinity in serving Black and brown men. part of that, and a big part of that, is through my own experience and my own identity as a man of color. So it's been extraordinarily rewarding to be able to hold space for other men who look like me to have very intentional conversations about how is it that we're showing up. One of the things that isn't lost on me in my experience and what I've observed from a lot of people, and you can even take the black and brown part out of this, just men in general, There hasn't been, in my view, a great modeling of what it looks like to be an open-hearted, responsible, authentic, vulnerable, truth-led man, right? There aren't enough models of men who are willing to be integrous, for men who are willing to honor accountability, who are willing to share openly and vulnerably with other men. And I think that is especially so in Black and Brown communities. And to be a leader in those spaces, to cultivate spaces, enroll people in the value of having a sacred space where, yes, we're having really intentional conversations about a variety of different elements around what it means to be a responsible man. And what I mean by that is being really owning how you show up, owning your patterns, owning your edges, owning who you say you are, and is how you walk through the earth a transmission of that vision. Because it makes a tremendous difference. But it's the conversations, it's the safety. I mean, men are in this space, and one of the big things that jumps out to me is how many men keep saying, I don't have other spaces where I can talk this openly and vulnerably about topics of substance in other areas of my life. Most of the friends that I have, and I feel really strongly about this, most men learn a very particular way in which to socialize with one another. And oftentimes it's looking at screens, right? Watching a game or drinking a beer. And don't get me wrong, everyone knows how big of a Celtic fan I am. And I love to eat and drink all of it too. And I deeply yearn for intimacy and to be able to have conversations like we're having right now, to be able to openly talk about our sex lives, our wants, our desires, our family lives, finances, right? Think about how many walls are up around so many of these different areas, which end up isolating us and not actually being in relationship around these topics. So to be someone who has done the work and takes the responsibility for himself and to hold space for others is, I don't have words to describe like the feeling and like the reverence and like the honor that I have for that. And the work matters. It matters to have men who are willing to own all of themselves and to model what it looks like for others. You never know, based off of how you show up, how that might give language to somebody else. It might give an example to somebody else, right? I started this conversation around my family. I didn't know what it meant. I didn't have examples of what it meant to be an open-hearted man or even a man that says, I love you. I never saw that in my experience growing up.
Well, now you're making me think, because I was like, when was the last time I saw that in my family? But yeah, you're right. No, that's not, I mean, we don't even talk about it. We don't even like think about it. The fact that's wild. It's so true how instrumental it can be to have a space where men get to be able to share comfortably about their insecurities, all the things that are difficult to talk about already for anybody, you know, like when you talk about finances and stuff. And then I think it's rare for men to experience what it's like, you know, to me, to be in a space where there's true psychological safety. Because, you know, men can struggle to provide that for other men too. You know what I'm saying?
So you are lying.
Yeah. So I think like to actually be in a space and see how that affects you when there's true psychological safety can be such a game changer. And it really does have to be really intentionally, deliberately cultivated, like you say, starting with ownership, because it's not something that just automatically happens within community. I know I've struggled myself, and I don't know too many groups that are specifically dedicated to BIPOC men, I have to say. So thank you for doing the work around that. And for anyone who's interested, they should definitely reach out to you to connect and see if they can join you, because again, it's just good to see people showing up in spaces where there's a need. You know, there needs to be somebody at the table to get a table started.
Well, thank you for that. That's super received. And I'd like to make 2 points off of that. One, yes, if people are interested in it, one of our big focuses of our group is inclusivity. So I hold multiple spaces, but the Man Cave, which is the weekly BIPOC men's call that I've been referring to, we intentionally want to create space for men to come in and experience this. Because the challenge is most men haven't, and especially men of color, haven't engaged in men's groups. They don't know about this type of relating and this type of intimacy. And what's predictable about something that you don't know? You're not going to mess with it, right? So really one of our big focuses is actually creating a powerful experience for men to come in. And if they want to be a part of it, we have different options where people can engage. We have a complimentary option where you just fill out the application, you're in. You get access to all of our weekly prompts. We have a Discord channel, all access to our community. And if you choose, keyword choose, that this is a space for you that you want to empower, then you can be a paid member, which is $50 a month, which if anybody who knows this work and the quality of the space and community that we're holding is pretty generous. And it's also within the service for inclusivity. So we don't want finance to be a barrier to entry for some men. So there's every element in here to create a spaciousness for people to come into it. And the second point that I want to emphasize, Robert, this space has been meticulously cultivated. This isn't, now, don't get me wrong, it would be super valuable just for a group of men of color to get together and talk shop and shop it up and have safety in it. But without specific agreements and expectations, then it's hard to have a structure for where you do have that safety, right? So we make it very clear, this is not a space for performance. Men can show up exactly as you are. You don't need to curate your answers. You don't need to sound like the smartest or most enlightened person in the room. If you want to curse, fucking curse, right? That's where we really open authenticity in men showing up exactly as they are, right? We have another expectation where men don't talk about their job titles because, as you alluded to earlier, men have a way of sizing each other up based off of what they do, what industry they're in. So it's actually not into the space. Now, of course, as we build relationship, particularly with these men outside of it, people will have an understanding of maybe of some of the things that they do, but it is not a part of our initial relating. Mm-hmm. And anytime we have a new member, everybody comes in here when they fill out the application. And when a new member enters the space, we review the agreements and expectations. So I share that the space is meticulously held, right? And I could go on and talk about it because I think these things are really important. But, you know, I'll end with this. One thing that I feel is missing from a lot of men's spaces in general is the connection to your body. And your breath is the access to consciousness. And so we begin each phase with, or each session with, taking a few minutes to go through some guided breath work, to have the men get more familiar with their physical vessels. I mean, it's shocking how much information is within our bodies, and even more shocking of how much we aren't being present to some of those messages. Mm-hmm. And before any prompts, we have an emotional check-in where we actually create space for men to share how they're doing, distinguish feeling. So again, I just share this, although it would be really supportive to have just a space where men get together, these spaces are the spaces that I hold and I lead are a reflection of my leadership and are meticulously cultivated. Everything has an intention and I have deep reverence for this work. And that's really important to me.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that so that people can have a sense of like the space, that how the space is honored. You talk about, you know, when men ask about, it's like, so what do you do? And that's about the most intimate conversation they will have with each other.
No, we don't do that here. There is no,
taking that out from the start. And it's just like, wow, even that is like a little bit of a game changer because you have to find another way to introduce yourself and to share who you are with the world. And I can see how deliberate that is. So what are the best ways to connect with you, either about coaching or about any of the group offering that you have just mentioned? What's the best way to check you out?
The best is email, which is austin@austinwalkercoaching.com. AustinWalker. Also, you can find me on Instagram at austin.walker.29. Shoot me a message, follow me, or you can go to my website at www.austinwalkercoaching.com with more information to how to connect. Whether it is you're looking to be connected with another coach, another man of color who is in this space, a friend, a colleague, perhaps you have an interest or you see a possibility for yourself in working with a wellness practitioner, or you see the possibility of being in a group, I firmly and fundamentally believe that everything begins in relationship. So nobody just goes and says, all right, I'm going to work with a coach and goes somewhere, and just starts working with a coach without having a conversation with them, or joins a group, or invites somebody out to dinner without some initial point of conversation. So that really matters to me. And, you know, I think one of the things that I'd love to share that I would hope to inspire by other people in connecting with me is that there's really an unattachment. It's like, what's possible when we actually truly connect for connection's sake? And trust, wherever it comes from, that will be what we needed. Like, that can be such a gift. So that's what I would share. If anybody does as truly have any desire to connect, then let's connect. And if we want to talk about all these other things, I can talk about it and hear you out till your ears fall off. But nothing happens without being in relationship.
Yeah, and being the willingness to start somewhere, right, in relationship. But thank you for your time today and sharing some of your work, what it took to get here, and also just knowing some of our shared experiences as men of color and as coaches. It's really cool to see how much your journey has evolved over the past like 5 years. And don't be a stranger this year. It's been nice seeing your journey, and I hope I continue to have that privilege.
Thank you so much, Robert. The feeling is mutual. It's an honor to do this work alongside men like you who hold this work to the highest caliber. Thank you for your partnership. Thank you for your friendship. And also thank you for holding such an intentional space in with your podcast and in this conversation. I feel really heard. I feel really seen. And I'm really delighted that I was able to share a little bit of my truth with you today.
Only more to come, you know, as we say.
Yeah, that's right.